Blog Talk Radio.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and tears here today. Oh, pick it light. It's fine. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on? What's going on? Yeah, what's going on? Oh, what's going on? Oh,
right on.
Of Allah, the beneficent, the merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. I further bear witness that Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is our divine reminder and our miss today. I greet you all, my distinguished panelists, as well as the listening audience, those of you who have joined us in the chat room and on the phone lines, in our greeting words of peace, assalamu alaikum. And it is my distinct honor and privilege to bring to you a man who has devoted his life into practical application of the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, my beloved brother Kareem Muhammad, all the way from St. Louis, Missouri. Assalamu alaikum, sir. How are you?
Wa alaikum salam, O Queen Aziza. I'm fine, all praises due to Allah, indeed, who came in the person of Master Farad Muhammad. And I thank you for that gracious introduction. And as always, I'm happy to be here to serve Allah and working with you.
Praise be to Allah, sir. Know that the honor is mine, indeed.
Yes, ma'am. Well, we're going to get right into it because, you know, we do not waste time here on Nation Building Network, neither on here on Conscious Black Nation. And this week, our subject, our topic, is one of vital importance. It is entitled The Black Man, Target Number One. And the reason our show has that title this evening is because if you look at the news, listen to the news, read the news constantly, one thing you keep seeing played out above all else. I mean, yes, it was a tragedy in Boston, but beyond the tragedy in Boston. Yes, there are hurricanes and tornadoes and everything else that's going on around the planet and in this country. However, one thing you will see that stands out is the continued death and, dare I say, murder of the black man. And when I say the black man, I'm talking about the black male in particular. And I just want to share a couple of things to set the tone, set the foundation before we introduce our illustrious panelists. And what I have first off is just a few statistics. One is we all remember the story of Trayvon Martin, who was murdered by George Zimmerman, 17-year-old black man, February 26, 2012. Some statistics I ran up on are these. They say in 2011, and I know there are many more, but this is what I could get. 2011, 7 black men murdered by Miami police. 385 black men murdered by the police in 2009. We know the numbers are much greater than that. Also, it says recently, young man named Kimani Gray, 16 years old, Flatbush, New York, murdered by the police March 9th. Now, in line with that, I want to share with us, like I say, to set the tone, and this is from the book The Fall of America by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, chapter 5, page 28. It reads, Under the Shadow of Death, he states, We, the black lost found of our people here in America, live under the shadow of death by way of cowardly enemies. Every one of us, the cowardly enemies seek our death one way or another. The cowardly enemies will not fight you as a brave man would fight you if they think that you would fight back. They will steal on you when you least expect an attack from them. We live under the shadow of death. We fled from the cowardly enemy devils of the South, seeking refuge in the same cowardly enemy's brother in the North. The enemy devils of the South followed us to the North to see that his brother of the North does not treat us any better than they did in the South. They seek police jobs so that they can beat and kill us who are trying to escape. They seek to kill us or get us killed at any price. They do not care about our loyalty to them. In their hearts, there is death for us, the black man in America. Today, they hold out promises to you only to deceive you. They know that Allah God is here offering to seat us in heaven at once. And since hell is their appointed place, they are trying to get us to go to hell with them on false promises. I have told you, believe it or let it alone. We live under the shadow of death. And with that as our foundation and backdrop, I would like to introduce to you Brother Mustafa Abdul Muhammad. And Brother, I want you to really just introduce yourself, let us know who you are, what you do, and then I want you to share your recent experience with us.
Yes, sir. Thank you, dear brother and sister, for allowing me the distinct honor of being a part of this interview and this show this afternoon. Let me first begin by giving honor to Allah, who we know came to us in the divine person of Master Farhad Muhammad, to whom praise is due forever, for coming among us and starting us in the process to make us back to God's once again. And we thank that God for raising up in our midst a little Georgia-born black man who was beat down by society, but met a God in person and became a God by meeting God in person. And that man prepared the man who we have all fell in love with today, who is the champion of the liberation of the black man and woman here in America, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. My name, as has been mentioned, is Brother Mustafa Abdul Muhammad. I am a student minister of Muhammad Mosque 98 here in Pensacola, Florida, serving the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, attempting to represent a man whom this world has not seen the full scope of yet, but in whom future generations will appreciate more than contemporaries are appreciating him. I have been a member of the Nation of Islam and a member of Islam since March the 20th of 1996. Prior to that, I lived the life of any other Negro. I drunk. I did drugs. I ran the street. I acted a fool. I disrespected my parents, my mother in particular. I did all of those things until my mother was fed up with me and she was about to kick me out of her home at the age of 17. And on October the 16th, 1995, a great call was made by the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, which we know as the Million Man March. And my mother told me that I would not go to school that day, but I would sit home and listen to Farrakhan. And this was the last straw. Farrakhan can't get no sense in my head, then I'm out of there. And I listened to the Million Man March. And at the end of hearing the message by the minister, I took that pledge as a young black man that I would strive to improve myself, improve my community, improve my development of myself. And that was a seed that started the journey bringing me to where I am now, a proud member of the Nation of Islam, striving to be a righteous black man and to help our people in this pitiful condition that we are in. As those who are on the line may or may not know, 8 days ago, last Sunday, going to Walgreens here in Pensacola, Florida. And mind you, before I say that, also, I am a black man who is a student minister, but also a black man who works two jobs, a black man who has sole custody of a daughter and striving to raise her properly as a junior MGT and as a civilized black woman in this society. So as I come from my second job, I went by Walgreens to get some Epsom salt to relax myself, to get myself back together, to get ready to go to job number one. Yes, as I go to purchase my items, I attempt to ring out. Three Caucasian members of the Walgreens staff confront me. Drop the things that you have stolen. I'm taken aback, but I'm not taken aback because that's what devils do. But I attempt at this time to plead my innocence. You know, I have my work uniform on. I have money in my pocket. You know, I don't steal. I don't have to steal. That's not what I'm into. This Caucasian, who I later found out was the manager, told me, well, we got you on tape. We saw you stealing these items. I know I'm innocent, so I challenge her. Pull the tape. Prove it. Then the other Caucasian, being true to themselves, well, no, we didn't see you on tape. Somebody told us they saw you putting items in your pocket. I said, bring them forth because they are damn liars themselves. Neither one brought any shred of evidence, either a videotape proving I was doing anything or a witness proving that I did these things. So the manager went to the back and for what I thought was viewing the video, which would have shown Nothing. So a few minutes later, two police officers come in. I say, oh, boy, here we go. Here we go. So at this time, the manager comes back up to the front as these officers are up front, and she's very bold now because she feels she has some back, as though I threatened her from the get-go. But she's very courageous now. Yeah, this is him. He's doing this. He stole. I saw him on tape. And I repeated again in front of these officers to her, I'm not a thief. I didn't come here to steal anything. I'm in a work uniform. I've had a full 8-hour shift, and I have to go to a second job within 5 hours. And I'm just trying to get something to rejuvenate myself so I can do so. I have no need to steal this afternoon. But if there's a tape, why don't she pull it and prove it? A few moments later, the female officer, who was a black sister, who was fairly kind, I must say, handcuffed me, took my shoes off, searched my body thoroughly. At this point, she turned to the Caucasian manager and told her, there's nothing on this man. I've searched him thoroughly. You've watched me search him. There's nothing on him. What is the basis of the accusation that you're making against him? She goes back, we got him on tape. This done tape. Again, I challenge her, pull the tape then. She wouldn't do that. So I got straight to the point because I knew what this was about. I've been black for 35 years. I told them the only reason this is going on is because I'm a black man in this store. You think I'm poor. You think I'm ignorant. You think I'm uneducated. You think I'm a criminal. And you have already prejudged me before I even got in here good. You have an idea of me before you even met me. At this point, this Caucasian man told me, oh, no, that's not true. I'm married to a black man. To which I reply, that's a black man who don't know who he is. That's a black man who don't know what time it is. Because though you are married to him, it is still not eradicated the racist, prejudice, bias, bigoted mind that you have and that you are displaying right now. The male officer, who was a Caucasian, attempted to downplay what I was saying as well by telling me, it don't matter what color you are, it don't matter what color boxer shorts that you have on, as though this is a joke. To which I replied to him respectfully, sir, with all due respect, I think that I'm a little more qualified than you, being a black man 35 years, and you've never been a black man, to speak on what I'm speaking on and know what I'm talking about. Going on, they attempted to tell me that they will put a trespassing charge on me. Mind you, they have not brought any evidence towards me. I'm handcuffed and bound. The female officer has searched my body. There's nothing on me. But yet they're going to put a trespassing charge on me. I told them, hell no, because I'm angry now. But I'm still conducting myself as a civilized black man. I'm not going off and getting belligerent, but I'm speaking with firmness to an enemy. I told him, no, you're not going to put that on me. You're not going to put that stigma of being a criminal over my head. You're not going to tell me I can't come here when I have not done nothing wrong at all. So we go on further than that. I beat that down. Then this is the last thing that the Caucasian manager told me. Well, why don't we just let bygones be bygones, and let's just pretend as though this has never happened, and you can come back here whenever you feel like it. I told her, ma'am, that's not good enough. I said, because you have inconvenienced my time. You have insulted me. You have humiliated me. You have defamed me among people that I am attempting to serve in the community as a student minister. So I cannot just let that go and say let bygones be bygones when it's because of you, you created a context in which I could have been killed. Because while all this was going on, brothers and sisters, and while I was handcuffed, no threat to anyone, I'm watching in my peripheral vision. And the Caucasian officer has his hand in a manner that it wouldn't be difficult for him to pull his gun very quick if need be. So by a Caucasian female lying, she created a context. What if I wasn't a civilized black man? What if I didn't have knowledge of self? What if I didn't have FOI training? What if I didn't know the time and what must be done? What if I didn't know how to speak and conduct myself and rise above emotion in the thinking of God? And I would have went off like most men, black men, would have went off and may have been justified in being so, being falsely accused. They would have justifiably killed me. And you would have been reading another case of a black man dead. They would have played it up. He came in stealing. We busted him. He became belligerent. He went off. He went crazy. He threatened us. We killed him in the store. So that is the story that I experienced at a Walgreens last Sunday in the city of Pensacola, dear brother and sister.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yes, it is. And I would say all praise is due to Allah, that you are, by Allah's grace and permission, the man that you are, and you are yet with us by his grace to share this with us. And
yes, sir.
I want to say this, before we really get deep into the subject. You know, that is, it was, you know, because you and I are friends on Facebook. However, it was when I saw that post, I had actually planned another subject for tonight. But when I saw that post and then also having seen the time and what must be done broadcast by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, not this Saturday just passed, but the Saturday before, you know, number 14, you know, the thought came to me, I mean, it was put on my mind and my heart, you know, this is a subject that we must book because that very incident exemplifies the time and what must be done. Mm-hmm. And before I get into, I have some questions, you know, which will develop the subject, but before I ask those questions, I would like to ask you, Queen Aziza, after hearing his story, what do you think? I mean, what does it put on your mind and heart?
Woo! Wow. You know, it's so typical of those kind of people, and it also shows that, you know, as much as society would like to think, black and white, as much as they would like to think that things have changed, this is just evidence that they have stayed the same. And, you know, fortunately for Brother Mustafa, that, you know, it didn't escalate to a more vital situation. However, just like he said, it could have been far worse. But this is just the atmosphere that these people are still trying to create amongst our people and, you know, see us in a negative light and portray us as being thieves and hustlers and pimps and, you know, just being deceptive. And when that is not, you know, the characteristic of most of us, you know, so it just reminds me even more so that we have a work to do when it comes to getting our own and building our own community so that people like Brother Mustafa, people like me, like you, would not have to stop at a white-owned establishment in our community to buy anything and to be, you know, put under that kind of racial profiling. you know, I thank Allah, Brother Mustafa, that nothing worse happened to you. And I'm sorry that you had that experience. But, you know, it's typical, Brother Kareem, and that just gives us more evidence that it's time to do for self.
Yes, ma'am. All praise is due to Allah. I agree with you 100%. And as a matter of fact, I'm not going to wait to the end. I'm going to say it right now. Everybody that's listening and everybody you talk to, we should not spend, I'm going to say it in the language that we use here in St. Louis, now on a dime in Walgreens. They should get no money from any of us or anybody that's associated with us. They should not get a dime. And that being said, I want to get into the first question. And again, I want to thank you, Brother Mustafa, for taking the time to come and share your story with us and share your time with us.
Yes, sir. It's an honor.
Yes, sir. Now, the first question I have is this. What is the reason that the black man, in your view, what is the reason that the black man, the black male in particular, is being targeted for death?
Oh, my dear brother, that's a very, very, very good question. And to answer that question, I have a message to the black man here. We're going to go straight to the source.
Come on
now. To understand why it is going on. And by going through this experience, I'm glad that it did happen. Because as the scripture says, all things work for the good of those who love the Lord. And I am very thankful to have a reminder that the devil is the devil. That he, she, they have not changed. He, she, they will not change.
That's right.
So we, as you say, we're in the valley of the shadow of death. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said to us, that for every 1,000 years the enemy has been on our planet, 100 million of the black race have died. So we add that up, that's 600 million black people have died for the 6,000 years that this open enemy has been on our planet. He says to us, in Message to the Black Man on page 116, there was no good talk to them while on the island. Pelon. By teaching the nurses to kill the black baby and save the brown baby so as to grab the white out of it, by lying to the black mother of the baby, this lie was born into the very nature of the white baby, and murder for the black people, also born in them, or made by nature a liar and a murderer. The black nation is only fooling themselves to take the Caucasian race otherwise. This is what Jesus learned of their history before he gave up his work of trying to convert the Jews or the white race to the religion of Islam. To answer your question, as the language of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he said that he doesn't think hard of the white race for what they do. He said if they did anything other than being a devil, he would be surprised. But they're doing what was put in them by nature. By nature, they were made to hate the black, murder the black, destroy the black. Sometimes it's on a subconscious level. They don't even know why they're doing what they're doing. But it's in them. Even though a white woman can tell me she lay down with a black man and is married to a black man, but when a certain circumstance came up, her white supremacist mind, her racism, came to a front. And it created a circumstance in which I dealt with this past Sunday. So to answer your question again in brief, dear brother, they just can't help themselves. And that's why Allah says there will be no peace until the peace breakers are gone off our planet. And that's why the Honorable Louis Farrakhan has really given us the time and what must be done. We have to pierce these messages apart and go deep into them and learn from them, because I believe, in my view, this is equivalent to Jesus giving the Last Supper in the scriptures. As Jesus gave his disciples a final meal, the Honorable Louis Farrakhan has given us a final spiritual meal. Because if we study the history, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave us weeks of lectures in the theology of time. And right after he gave us that final major spiritual meal, he was gone. Here we go. The Honorable Louis Farrakhan has given us a 52-week lecture series, The Time and What Must Be Done. He's pulling the cover off Satan. He's showing Satan is a trickster and a deceiver. He's showing the wars and the rumors of wars and the plotting of wars by this open enemy. Here we go. So, brother, as long as they are on our planet, there will never be peace, because it's just in their mind and in their heart to not see you and I. And as the Honorable Louis Farrakhan said, that a white man's heaven is a black man's hell. As long as they can keep us in hell, they can stay in heaven. But when we rise to heaven, that'll be their downfall into their hell.
Yes, sir. Praise be to Allah. Well, anyone that knows, anyone that listens knows that I'm a brother that looks for balance. So I must hear from the Queen on that same question.
I was trying to unmute my phone. Okay, what was the question, Brother Kareem?
Yes, ma'am. The question is, what is the reason that the black man, the black male in particular, is being targeted for death?
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, let's do with actual facts. Is black man is the cream of the planet Earth. And if the Earth belongs to the black man and a grafted devil has had rule over that land for so long, and he's now been made aware that the term of his nation is up, then this is a survival strategy, the survival tactics, if you will, that they are using. But it's the same thing. It has always been. It's historical that, you know, that they feel inferior to us. And so since they have been granted this temporary power, they enact that power in a very negative way on us, because we are a threat, because we are God's chosen people. And I don't want people to misunderstand and not think that white people have not studied the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Not only that, I don't want people to misunderstand that they don't, you know, don't think that they don't see the evidence of the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So this is almost like a scramble for survival. So, you know, it's just like with the killing of our babies. You know, how do you kill a nation? You kill the seed. So, you know, they had this long period of time where they were going after our black men. And now they have this thing where they're incarcerating our black men. Well, why are they doing that? If they're killing them and if they're incarcerating them, then they can't reproduce. So what population is dominating the earth now? It's men of other color, other races, but then the white man is trying to take people, you know, the original people out so that he can be dominating force and so his seed can go on. But, you know, that's not going to happen because he's a minority race. And, you know, so it's the same thing all over again. They're trying to kill the black nation. And they're not just doing it to black people. They're doing it to brown people. They're doing it to red people. They're doing it to yellow people. They're doing it to every people. And they're doing it to their own anytime anybody differs them, because that's what a devil does. But, you know, it's really a sad day when I hear the minister, you know, every Saturday giving what I call the final call in the time of what must be done, that people are not adhering to the message and turning a blind eye on the actual facts because they don't like who is delivering the message. If it was a white pastor up there teaching the same thing, black and white, everybody would be listening. But just because you don't like the messenger, you want to kill the message. And so that's just what it is. It's just that time. You know, we're in the battle of decision, but we're also in a time of separation. But don't think that this devil is not going to fight for what is inevitably lost for him. His time of rule is up. Every nation has his term. His term is up. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, and thank you very much. Yes, sir. Brother Mustafa.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir, you're with us. Yes, sir, thank you. All right, and before I do get into the second question, I want to preamble it by saying, because you answered part of it, but I want a little more depth on it. But the thing is, I want to say this is, and yes, we do realize that a lot of the death that we see among black people is being perpetrated by black people, on black people, you know. And that being the case, however, we have to look deeper, as you were just saying. And the question is this. In your view, who do you see as the orchestrator of this organized effort to stop the growth of indeed to wipe out the black male is out of existence?
Carter G. Woodson, many, many years ago in his book, The Miseducation of the Negro, says, when you control a person's thinking, you do not have to worry about the outcome. When you control a person's thinking, you don't have to tell them to go to the back door. They are automatically go to the back door by means of their mental conditioning. And if there's not a back door back there, they will call one out to make sure there's a back door back there when you control a person's thinking. What we are looking at, dear brother, though it may seem is black on black crime, what is the mind that's driving the black man in doing these things? This is a true case, I would say. The devil made them do it.
Yes, sir.
I had two Jehovah's Witnesses came to my home earlier today, and they thought they was coming to teach me. And they asked me a question that I'm sure they saw a young man. I had my regular clothes on. I'm sure they didn't think I had any scriptural depth. And they asked me a question. What is the greatest commandment, young man? I said, the greatest commandment is love God with all your heart, your mind, and your soul. And the second is like unto it, to love your neighbor as you love yourself. I said, however, what does that mean to black people? I said, if you don't love your neighbor, you can't love yourself. If you don't love your neighbor or love yourself, you can't love your God properly, wouldn't you say so? I said, so what we're seeing in the black community is the self-hatred and the hate of the enemy put in us, and we have become the modern-day killers of ourselves. But it's not us doing it by ourselves. It's the mind of another person in us controlling us. As I said, when you control a person's thinking, you don't have to worry about the outcome. We are just a little puppets, but it's the mind of the enemy working through us to do these things that's killing us. It's the mind of the enemy in slavery that is making us do these things. It's the mind of the enemy put in us that makes us mistreat our black woman, impregnate her, walk off on her, deny our children. Yes, we have to take responsibility of that, but we have been outright miseducated, and we have the mind of the white man in us, and we're doing his deeds, his aims, and his purposes. So, yes, a black body may be doing it, but I look at the inner core, as the scripture says, be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. It's something wrong with the black man's mind when he's a functionary of Satan and allowing himself to be a tool of Satan in our community.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And what say you, Queen?
Okay, Brother Jahan, you know I'm trying to work this board. Okay, so you got to ask it one more again.
Okay. The question is, who do you see as the orchestrator of this organized effort to stop the growth or indeed to wipe out the black male from existence?
Well, not naming one person in particularly, you know, it's the nature of the grafted one. You know, they are taught, they plan 100 years in advance, and this is something that is taught to them. You know, just like everybody has their culture, you know, everybody have their rituals. Well, this is something that white people are taught about us and how to interact with us and how to, inflict us with all the harm and damage and imagery destruction that they can. I mean, this is second nature to them. And then when you have a government that is built on the same type of principle, because know that when they were writing the Constitution, it was not inclusive of black people, and it's still not inclusive of black people because we are not natural citizens. You know, we were granted a citizenship, but we are not natural citizens, so they didn't have any freedom, justice, and equality intended for us. So this is the nature of them. And if you want further evidence of that, you can look all over the world, everywhere that they've gone. You know, they have enacted this type of policy and procedure upon all of the darker people of the earth. You know, it's more about power and control than it is about race. However, they have made it clear that any person of color is not to really elevate to a level of what would be called equality in this country. So it's the nature of the beast that creates this atmosphere for those people to act the way that they act. And the sad thing about it is that we have become that habitation of devils as well. So separation is definitely needed in order to combat this, but we have to be knowledgeable and we have to be realistic about what's going on. You know, all this, you know, let's, you know, put color aside and let's unite. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. That's a grand idea. However, when your nature is contrary to Allah, know with the surety that that can't happen. So it's that nature, Brother Karun. If I had to just sum it all up, it's the nature of the beast.
Yes, ma'am.
May I add one more thing, Brother Karun?
Yes, sir. You go right ahead, brother. Yes, sir.
Yeah, there was something that I wanted to read and share with the listening audience.
Certainly.
In slavery, we have to remember that the slave master, he didn't do all the dirt himself. That he had a particular one that was called the overseer. When he got tired of whipping our behinds, he passed the whip over to the overseer. And it was the overseer's job to whip our behinds and to be the eyes and ears of the enemy. I want to read a passage from something just giving us a history of that overseer. And let's see if we have some modern day overseers. Let's check it out.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
This is a passage about speaking of slave overseers. Francis Frederick has argued that some plantation owners employed slaves as overseers. He pointed out in his autobiography, "My grandmother's master was one of the hard kind. He had made her son an overseer. Consequently, my grandmother, having committed the crime of attending a prayer meeting, was ordered to be flogged by her own son. This was done by tying her hands before her with a rope and then fastening the rope to a peach tree and laying bare the back. Her own son was then made to give her 40 lashes with a thong of raw cowhide. her master standing over her the whole time, blessing and threatening what he would do if her son did not lay it on. And oftentimes in these scenarios, if the overseer slave would show any type of contrition, the slave master would take the whip from that overseer, whip his behind thoroughly, give him the whip back, and make him continue whipping whoever he whipped. But this was just an instance where a mother's own son had to whip her, although he would face chastisement from the slave master, who would whip him and her at the same time. So it may be an enemy who originates the thought, but a lot of us are acting as overseers, knowingly or unknowingly, because, as I said, we're doing just what the slave master has done, will do, and will continue to do to us. So a lot of us have accepted the role of an overseer. We are devil's advocate.
Yes, sir. I mean, that's absolutely 100% correct. And I mean, and on that note, as Sister Queen Aziza was saying, she talked about, she spoke about separation. And that's something we haven't necessarily gotten to yet. It's part of our talk tonight. But since it's been brooked already, I want to say this and then get to the next question. Now, with where separation is concerned, when we talk about separation, and as Muslims, a lot of us, we think about separation, you know, from the slave master or from the slave master children. We think about a land or a nation of our own. How does separation relate to just what the subject you were speaking about, those who have become overseers, those who are actually acting not necessarily out of coercion, but out of favor that they receive from the enemy? Where does separation come in where they're concerned? And I'm directing that question at you, Brother Musa.
Yes, sir. In the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's 12-point program, the first step, he said, was separate yourself from the slave master. But I've heard our regional minister, Brother Minister Rasul Muhammad, teach us that the first separation you have to take place is a mental separation. You got to come out of the slave master's mind. You have to separate from his way of thinking, the thoughts that he has put in our head, our ideas of seeing God, our ideas of seeing the devil, our ideas of seeing heaven and hell, our ideas of seeing the Bible, reality, life. So we have to separate on a mental level from this man. Otherwise, if we physically separate, but we don't separate from the slave master's mind, we're still going to play out the slave master's playbook wherever we go, if we don't have a mental separation. As the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said in one of his tapes, he was speaking of Liberia, who had won their independence and was an independent African state. And he said, Liberia is physically independent, but there's a string still attached to Europe. And so they're still ran and still controlled by Europe, though they have their quote-unquote independence. So as a nation, which we are going to be, we have to separate ourselves from the mind of Satan, which is why the Honorable Louis Farrakhan is teaching us of the Dianetics. He's teaching us of self-improvement as the basis of community development, rising above emotion into the thinking of God, other tools and things that he is teaching us to take us out of that slave master's mind. Because oftentimes you may see, we don't allow Caucasian or white people to come into our mosque. But what if he put his mind in a Negro in a bow tie? What if he put his mind in a Negro S in a headpiece? He can't physically come into the mosque, but he sends his mind into the mosque in a Negro. And we see hell take place in the mosque, though we see nothing but X's and Muhammad's in the mosque. But there's hell in our mosque, because an enemy has mentally infiltrated our mosque. And that's why we are taught at the search post that we search your body, but we also search your mind. We search your spirit. We search your attitude before you come into our mosque. So, dear brother, there has to be a separation of the mind of this world, which is the mind of Satan himself, tricks and games and deceit, lying and murdering. So once we take that mental separation, the physical separation would be just right.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. All right, I'm going to move on to question number 3. And again, this is directed to you, Brother Mustafa. And this question is, other than your personal experience, which you just had, you know, this particular one, all right, of late, what other examples have you seen of the attack on black? You know, I mean, just yourself recently. What have you seen? You know, and in your, you know, how do you see that?
Oh, my goodness, brother. I mean, I could write voluminous books on things that are just the attacks on us. I mean, from your Trayvon Martins, from your Ahmaud Diallo a couple years ago, who was shot 41 or 42 times as he reached for his credit card or wallet or something. He was shot in New York. Abner Louima, who stuck the billy club up his rectum and jammed it down his mouth, to Rodney King, to unnamed brothers. Just here in Pensacola a couple years ago, we had another black man who was riding on a bicycle late at night, riding home through a neighborhood. And the police ran over this young brother who was 17 years old, I believe. And the police ran over this brother and left the car on top of this brother for a long time. Wouldn't even remove the car from the brother. They thought he was still a threat. And it was a big mess here in Pensacola because the brother, of course, was unarmed. He was no threat. But this officer, and we had it on film. We had the tape, and it was played on TV, on the internet, and others. But as often is, we can see it on tape. But they judge or others call it justifiable homicide. So just being a black man, I see so many instances that don't make the news of just disrespect and abuse and murder of us as black people. Just facing their arrogant attitudes, when they don't see this as 2013, they think this is 1613 or 1713 or 1813. The attitude that we're still to be drawers of water and hewers of wood for others, that they still have an attitude that we're supposed to be subservient to them. They still have not seen us as free, justified, and equal. Even with a college degree, even with a master degree, even with a PhD, you just doctor nigger to them. You just master nigger to them. You just bachelor nigger to them. Even with a black president in a White House, they still have not saw him as a full man. They have not saw him as they should see him, as a president of the United States of America. And we see attacks on him. We see attacks on his lovely wife and on his lovely daughters. We see plots and plans to kill the president of the United States of America. Not to say that plots and plans have not been against presidents before, but we know that these plots and plans are against him because he's a black man in a White House, and white people fear that their power is slipping by seeing a black man. So we see the attack on the black man from his top as the White House all the way to little brothers on the street corner. Here and there, named, some unnamed.
Sir, yes, sir. And on that note, I myself want to, before, you know, as we continue, not before, but as we continue, speaking on the subject of separation, in the book, Message to the Black Man, which is one of my textbooks,
yes,
you
sir.
Know, and I mean, I'm studying it on the regular, have been
yes,
for
sir.
Years,
yes,
on
yes,
page 300. Yalambil Elijah Muhammad states this. I'm not going to read it all. For those who don't have a copy, I strongly suggest you get a copy, you know, because you're going to need it. It's a guide mm-hmm. to you. And those mm-hmm. who do have copies, don't just read it, study it,
mm-hmm.
meaning
mm-hmm.
find yourself in it. But on that page, it's the chapter that starts, it's Build Our Own Society.
Yes, sir.
Yalambil Elijah Muhammad states, when I speak of the time and what must be done, I am not referring to the time of the solar system, but to the time of a people whose existence and rule of the original people of the earth is limited to 6,000 years. This time of 6,000 years was divinely given to this world, the time of being under the rule of a completely new and strange people whose nature is foreign to our nature, a strange and new civilization, a deceiving people to us, with its strange practices, which include doing evil and murdering the people. According to the teachings of Allah, this is the first and the last time we will ever have a troublemaking people on our planet. There is no doubt about it. We, who were brought here to the Western Hemisphere by the white slave masters of our fathers, can bear witness that this is the most evil people that we have ever experienced. Today, the wickedness of this civilization has become so great and fair-seeming to the original people of the earth. He said that 12 leaders from Islam from all over the planet earth have conferred in the root of civilization at Mecca and have found this people disagreeable to live with in peace, and they decided that they must be removed from the planet earth. And the main obstacle that stands in the way of this removal is the so-called Negroes in America, who have been lost of the knowledge of self, their God, their religion, and the knowledge of the enemy who has robbed them. They must return to their own. And we're at, we got like 4 minutes to the top of the hour. And Queen Aziza, I want to ask, are there any questions, any comments? Anybody got their hand up on the phone or in the chat room?
No, not at this time. But I want to remind the listening audience, those of you who are in the chat room, please type in your question and we will ask it on your behalf. Those of you who are listening by phone, please press 1 on your dial pad and we will take your question. No, there are a lot of listeners, but no questions as of yet.
Yes, ma'am. All praise is due to Allah. And just to, as I've heard many of my brothers and sisters say, to Zizzy back on what the Queen just said, remember, this is Conscious Black Nation. So please do not be afraid to make any comments or to ask questions, because that's what this is about. What we're here to do on this show, indeed with the Nation Building Network, what we're here to do is to not only talk about problems, but what we want to do is also come up with or offer practical solutions, give one another practical application, things that we can use in our everyday life to survive this horrible and wicked time, as well as strive in this time. And Brother Mustafa.
Yes, sir.
Now, question number 4 that I want to direct to you is, and in line with what I just said, is what suggestions do you have for anyone who finds himself in a similar situation as you found yourself?
Yes, sir. That's a very, very excellent question. And that leads into something that we're going to do here locally as a result of what happened. We're going to put on a program here. We have a friend of the nation here whose name I won't mention at this time, but he's a friend of the Nation of Islam here locally. He has experience in the police department.
Yes, sir.
And he has educated us on many, many things of how to survive an encounter with the police. Because your main goal is you want to go home to your loved ones and your family.
That's right.
He taught us how something as basic as using your smartphone as a weapon, not a weapon of attack, but a weapon of survival. He taught us that they are recording you, so you have a right, as long as you tell them, you can record them for your benefit.
Yes, sir.
You can video record them for your benefit. They're doing it to you. You tell them with all due respect, I'm going to record this interaction right now. He also told us how to speak properly, because we're dealing with a person of authority. And in their mind, they think they're God, because with their weapon, they can take your life. right then and there. And so with this situation that I went through, I had to really, dear brother, as the Honorable Elijah, Honorable Louis Farrakhan, pardon me, taught us, I had to rise above emotion into the thinking of God. My initial reaction was one of anger. My initial reaction was one of wanting to yell, call them the cracker, call them who they were. That was because this was unjust. So I had to rise above my emotion into the thinking of God and think mathematically on how do I handle this devil and how do I handcuff this devil so that he cannot do any harm to me and I can go home to see my loved ones. So the first thing our brother, who's a friend of ours here, told us is you have to have knowledge. You have to know your rights. You have to know your rights by studying the laws and statutes of your state or your locale, so that you'll know how to speak with intelligence to these people whom you are encountering. The greatest thing that they want to do is keep you ignorant. Because if you don't know, they'll run all over you. And in this encounter with them, by virtue of my brother teaching me things, I was able to cut all corners every way they went. I was able to cut that corner off, cut that corner off, cut that corner off, until they had nothing left. They had to let me go. Because they saw they wasn't dealing with a dumb, ignorant black man. So anyone dealing with that situation, you have to rise above emotion into the thinking of God first. Because they expect you to go off. They expect you to be loud, ignorant, belligerent, saying this and that that you may say in the street, so that they can use that as justifier to arrest you, harm you, or even kill you. So rise above emotion into the thinking of God. And secondly, have knowledge of what your laws and statutes are in your particular state or area so that you can be able to speak intelligently and, as the scriptures say, resist the devil and he'll flee from you. Resist him with knowledge. Show him you know what time it is and make him flee from you. We had a brother here I found out today who put this very tactic on them. He was pulled over by an officer, and just what our brother was teaching him on what to say and how to say it. The brother, FOI here, told us, this Caucasian got in his car, hit the gas so fast, and flew away from him. This FOI, he didn't have a gun. This FOI, he didn't have a gun or a rocket launcher or anything like that. But what he had was knowledge in his head. And he was able to speak to this man with a superior knowledge. And he made this officer run from him just by him knowing his rights and knowing what to say at the proper time.
Yes, sir. Other than, as you just said, while recording them with your smartphone, I mean, are there any other particulars, you know, any other particular instructions that the brother may have given you?
Not necessarily. It's still an ongoing teaching. We're still learning from this dear brother, but he just really brought us up to speed on the things that they can do and things that they can't do. And he said that one of the biggest things that mess us up is that we speak on that which we know not. He said that we have more power than we know. But by opening our mouths and speaking incorrectly or not speaking on things that we know of, we give them more power than they have. He said, for instance, you don't have to let them in your home. He said, for instance, you have a right to tell them if they ask to search you, your vehicle, that I don't consent to you searching, but I'm not going to obstruct you or I'm not going to stop you from doing your job, but you don't have my permission to do so. Just little housekeeping things of that nature to help us to survive these encounters with these particular people.
Yes, sir. Well, said, I mean, that brings to mind, at this point in time, instructions given to us by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave us instructions of this wise. He told us that in order for us to be successful, you know, in order for us to be successful, there were three things that we must do, that we must have. The first of those things he told us that we must have is that we must have, and listen to the words, he said, we must have a mastery of mathematics. Mm-hmm. Then he told us that we must have a thorough knowledge of history. And the third thing he said, which falls right in line with what you were just talking about, is that we must have a command of the English language. Mm-hmm. Because, and a lot of people don't really get that, I mean even among us in the ranks, you know, because that's one of the things that makes quote-unquote Dianetics so powerful, is the fact that what they call the clearing of words, you know, you got to clear words. Well, see, I mean, for me, long before I ever was introduced to Dianetics, which I was introduced to it when I was like 17 years old originally, and then reintroduced to it when the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan instructed us to go get the tool. And let's be clear on that, we went to go get the tool of Dianetics, because as he himself stated, I will state myself, I didn't go there looking for no religion. I got my religion. I am a Muslim. I don't need, I'm not knocking Scientology, but I don't need Scientology. I am a Muslim, and I have the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And one of the things I do is, no matter where I go and study, no matter where I go get information from, I filter everything I get through the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
That's right.
I listen to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan as he goes into it in depth and breaks it down and makes it so that none of us have an excuse to say we don't understand, because he's taken it apart for us. He's literally broken everything down and been spoon-feeding it to us. So we need to stop talking about we don't understand. And on that note, when we're talking about a command of the English language, something that was brought to my attention again, something I learned some years ago, but recently in a conversation with a brother, he brought it back to my attention, just what you were saying, just in how the language we use with them. Mm-hmm. For example, usually when they come to a person, or actually what they do is when they come to you and tell you that you're under arrest, you have to understand, know the definition, not just Webster's definition, but you also need to know the legal definition of what the word arrest means.
Mm-hmm.
When they come to you and say, I'm going to read you your rights, you look at that language. Understand what the word your means. Understand what the word rights means for yourself. The thing is this. Anytime any person speaks to you, and this is how they get us tripped up in a lot of situations, anytime particularly someone who is designated as an officer of the court.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it was originally said an officer of the court, it had nothing to do with these courts that we go to, but it was an officer of the court of the King or Queen of England.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they were coming from. So you have to know these things in order, like you said, to be able to deal with that. And I just want to share some of this with the people, like I said, practical application. For example, like you said, you don't have to let them search your house. And if they force it, based upon your response to them when they come and tell you, even if they come and tell you, we have a search warrant, that means they had to go somewhere and they had to go to a judge and get this paper signed by a judge based upon what they considered probable cause, is what they call it. Well, again, you got to, and I'm saying this because people need to look these things up. Get a black law dictionary. If you can't afford one,
that's
go to
right.
the library and get one. And look up what these words mean in legal terminology. But, the, but what I want to get to is this. If anything they say to you, you notice at the end of them saying to you, once they quote-unquote read you your rights, they ask you the question, they say, do you understand these rights that I have read to you? And most individuals, out of lack of knowledge, out of fear, will say, yes, I understand. Well, see, what has happened at that moment, you have now entered into a legal contract with this officer. You have now given them permission to continue to arrest you. And in legal terms, to arrest means to stop movement, to bring into a condition of custody whereby you are under the control of some, you are literally giving over your control of yourself to this individual. Because when you say you understand, you look at the word legally, understand means that you support what they have just told you. So you're entering it into a legal contract. And basically that's what's going on with anything that happens. That's why one of the many reasons that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told us we must have a command of the English language. Because when you know the language, look at how the minister moves with the language. Look at how Malcolm X tied them up with the language. Look at the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and how he tied them up with the language and even offered them, if I remember correctly, $10,000 out of his brother's vest pocket if they could prove that one word of what he said was incorrect. Because he had a command of the language, and has a command of the language. And, yes, sir. So now, go ahead, bro.
Yes, sir. As you have mentioned those things, I was trying to pull my, I was pulling my notes that the brother had, that I transcribed as our brother friend who's been teaching us locally here, some, and I have some of those notes. I didn't want to miss state anything, so but I have those notes now, and I would like to just share at this time some of those practical things, as you say, that he's been telling us on how to deal with these officers.
Please, sir, please do. That's what we're here for. All praise is due to Allah.
Yes, sir. As I mentioned earlier, but I'll repeat it again because we're Satan. He says, let the officer know you're recording. But you must tell the officer when you audio record, because that's considered illegal. That can be inadmissible if anything comes up. But if you tell him that you are audio recording him with a smartphone, then that's not illegal. It's not illegal to video record them. That you don't have to permit or anything. You can video record them. He told us to always use the language with all due respect. Sir,
mm-hmm.
with all due respect,
that's
I don't
right.
agree with this. With all due respect, that, as I mentioned with my situation, with the officer told me that it don't matter what color you are, I told him, sir, with all due respect, I've been black for 35 years, but I used prefix all due respect.
That's
because,
right.
Because you're dealing with a beast. And so to put his ego at ease, we'll use the language of with all due respect. To show respect, as we're taught as Muslims, to show respect for authority. He says, you can ask them, why am I getting out of the car if they ask you to get out? He says, the Fourth Amendment gives you the right. You can stay in your car if you feel threatened. For safety reasons, you can stay in your car, according to the Fourth Amendment. He says, never consent to anything. They'll take
that's
advantage
right.
of it and run or never consent to anything. If they force it on you, you tell them this. You do not have my permission to do thus and so, but I'm not going to obstruct you from doing your job. But you do not have my permission. I'm going on record. You do not have my permission to do this. He says, ask them, am I under arrest? If not, he says, you tell them, with all due respect, I'm going about my business. He says, as I mentioned, use knowledge to defend yourself. He says, you can only be detained on the side of the road for 20 minutes without arrest. Start, watch your watch. When it goes from 19 to 20, if they haven't arrested you or done something, they can't detain you no longer than that by law. And he says, always ask for a business card. Their business card to them is what an ID is to us. They got everything on it of their number, who they officer, things of that nature. He said, always ask for the business card. Also, he said, which was applicable to us, to study the Florida State Statute Handbook, but whatever state you're in, study the State Statute Handbook so that you would know those little laws like being on the side of the road for 20 minutes or you can stay in your car for safety. Or even this, let's say you're driving down the road, 12 o'clock at night for whatever reason, maybe you work a night shift, I don't know, and a police pull behind you. And you're in a dark area, and if they pull you over, that may be your last night on this planet. He told us that you should call 911 yourself and ascertain that that is an actual officer behind you. Because what if they get you on the side of the road nowhere, no witnesses, it's dark, and you're gone, you're out of there, there's no witnesses. Is their word versus yours, and you're dead, so you have no word now. So you have to protect yourself in a situation like that when you're driving down a dark road or at night where there's no witnesses. Get to a lighted area. Get to a convenience store where there are witnesses who may deter him from doing what may be in his heart for you. So those are just some of the brief things, the notes that I had from our brother who has been sharing things with us and continues to share things with us on how to survive encounters with the police.
Yes, sir. Praise be to Allah. And again, that's what we're looking for. Like what you just shared, I want to thank you, brother, for that, because that's what we got to have, is things that we can apply in everyday life, because otherwise it's just words. It's just information. When we are able to use it and apply it, then it becomes knowledge, something we can stand on and actually use to improve the condition of our lives.
Yes, sir.
Now, I want to get to now the last question that I have on the page here, which segues from the previous question. And beyond just, like I say, for example, a stop by the police or anything else, in general, in what we are dealing with and what we are dealing with in life today, the situations that we're running upon economically, the situations we're running upon socially, what steps should we all take, everyone, to survive the war? Because we're at war, whether or not individuals recognize it or not. We are at war, and your situation exemplifies that. Just lets us know that the murders, and I've used the term, people will say killing, no, the murders of young men and women, because there was a young lady here in St. Louis. Not too long, well, it was last year, I believe, but she was at a service station, if I'm not mistaken, and it's been posted on Facebook, and she refused to leave, so the police came and arrested her. As a matter of fact, she was not at a service station. The young lady was at a hospital emergency room. That's where she was at. She was at a hospital emergency room, and she was deathly ill, seeking assistance. They called the police on her. The police removed her from the emergency room, and she died in the jail cell.
My goodness.
See, that's murder. I don't care how anyone else wants to look at it, that's murder. You know, and for the, and they use the term, for those, the bleeding hearts, those who want to, with this, can we all just get along?
Mm-hmm.
It's time for us to stop trying to get along. Can't you see that all we're going to get is more death and destruction? I mean, that's the reality of it. But the question again, I want to really state it. What steps should we all be taking to survive the war that is evidently being waged against us on all levels? And I'm going to direct that to you first, Brother Mustafa, and then Queen, once he finishes, please weigh in.
Yes, sir. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave us a 12-point program in Message to the Black Man, Chapter, Program, and Position. And in these 12 steps, he gave us the guide to survive and to become an independent nation. He says it just like this. We must stop relying upon the white man to care for us. We must become an independent people. So-called Negroes should. And then he gives us those 12 steps. This situation, as a people, many people in the city of Pensacola are angry. Many people have said that they're not going to go to Walgreens no more. But I ask the question, are we angry enough to not just not go to Walgreens no more, but why don't we set up our own store?
Come on, black man.
Are we angry enough to not just boycott a white man business, but let's create our own gas stations? Are we angry enough that we'll create our own Walmart, Black Mart, create our own restaurants, our own things? Are we that angry enough? Give you an example. When Martin Luther King and the civil rights leaders were going through the Montgomery boycott back in the 50s, because we could not sit in the front of the bus, a black man named S.B. Fuller came up with this proposition. He told Martin Luther King and the leaders at that time, he said, let's don't just boycott the Montgomery bus system. Why don't we buy the Montgomery bus system? And the Negroes of that time, Negro-minded people, oh, no, we just want a fair ride. We just want to ride the bus. They could not see beyond just riding the bus. You could own the bus, and you determine where you sit when you own the bus, and now you're creating economic opportunities for self. So as it was then, so it is now. We get angry at Walgreens, but are we angry enough to create, say, we're going to pool our resources? As the Honorable Louis Farrakhan taught us at this Savior's Day, if we would just give 35 cents a week as a black nation, in a year's time, we would have a quarter of $1 billion at the end of a year. That's just 1 year. When you got a quarter of $1 billion, you can call some shots. You can start buying your own farmland. You can start producing your own schools. You can begin to send qualified black people to school to get educated to now become teachers in that school. You can now produce your own administrators. You can produce your own principals to run and administer that school. When you got a quarter of $1 billion, you don't have to rely on T-Mobile, Verizon, AT&T, or these other cell phone companies. You produce your own cell phone company. As the Honorable Louis Farrakhan said, we as black people, statistically, we spend $19 billion on cell phones a year. And he asked rhetorically, what the hell are we talking about, spending $19 billion a year? But we can produce our own cell phones, considering that a black man created the cell phone that we don't know about. So we have to pool our resources now more than ever and do for self. Because anyone in this listening audience, you have to agree. Either they're not hiring us, either they're about to fire us, or they're cutting ours. How can you survive under that type of thing? Either not being hired from the get-go, they're about to fire you, or they're playing with your hours on your job. Or is that just a Pensacola thing? Or is that just a Mustafa thing? Or is that a black thing that's going on among the whole black people? We don't have to put up with their games anymore. We follow the guide and the guidance in the Honorable Louis Farrakhan. Just by pooling a little money aside, we can do anything that we want to do. He says America is for sale. The Chinese are buying up America. Other people are buying up America. Why can't we buy up America and produce things for ourselves? produce our own communities like the Amish people do. We can do that ourselves. So we have to do as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says. He told us in the 60s, he said, do something for self before you are forced to do something for self. We at the time, now black man and black woman, listening artists, we at a time where we are forced to do something for self. Because if you don't do something for self, you're going to die on the wayside. They have let you go. They have no more jobs for you. They don't want to produce no more jobs for you. We done near live in an automated society. When is the last time you've been to a grocery store here, and I'm sure there, they have automated checkout lines. They don't need a human being no more. You go to the checkout line, you ring yourself out, you put your money in, it gives you a receipt, it gives you your change. They don't need a human being for that no more. You call T-Mobile. You don't have to necessarily talk to a human being. That thing is automated now. Press 1 for this. Press 2 if you would like to go here. Say your credit card number. They don't need a human being no more. You go to other places. When the last time you had to go into a bank physically? I can do all my transactions through the ATM machine. I can put money in the bank, get money out of the bank, get my statement, get my balance. I don't have to deal with a human being. So, family, they are cutting us off. And as the Muslim program said, we do not believe that America will be able to produce enough jobs for our own millions of unemployment, let alone you and I. If jobs are to be created, you know they're not going to give them to us. We'll get the crumbs, but hell, why get the crumbs when we can produce the whole meal for ourselves through unity and pooling our resources, doing something for self? So we're going to have to revisit, if we're not revisiting, the economic program of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. We're going to have to pool and look at that three-year economic program so that we can survive as a people. And the beauty of the Honorable Louis Farrakhan listening audience, who may not be Muslim, is that he's thinking about you even though you may not be a part of the Nation of Islam. He said the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught him, think for the whole. So as we raise this money, we're not just thinking about the little Nation of Islam. We're thinking about the whole Nation of Islam, which is 30 to 40 million black people in the wilderness of North America. So as I think about putting bread on my table, black man and black woman, we want to put bread on your table, black man and black woman, so that we can all survive the fall of America, which we are in right now. So family, we got to do for self. Family, we have to unite for self. Family, we have to make our own neighborhoods a decent and safe place to live. We have to spend our money among ourselves. We have to build an economic system among ourselves. We have to rid ourselves of the lust of wine, drink, and learn to love self and kind. As you said, we spend $3 billion getting drunk, getting high, when we can use that $3 billion or more for construction and uplifting of our own communities. Let's use our education for self. Don't get educated and go give it back to them. Build your own business. Support your own black business by using your educational talent and resources. So those are the things, based upon my understanding of the teachings and the minister's guide, that we must do to survive this very perilous time that we are in.
Yes, sir. Praise be to Allah. And Queen Aziza.
Yes, sir. I'm right here.
I know you haven't gone anywhere. Like I said, I want to get your take on that.
Wow, okay. And, you know, I was listening to Brother Mustafa, but what was the question?
The question was, I understand. I know it's not a problem. That's on me. I closed the book too soon. The question is, what's this, at this point in time, you know, not just dealing with the situation that Brother Mustafa dealt with, but with all the things that we're dealing with now, economic, educational, social, all of the issues that we have, what steps should we all take to survive the war, because we are indeed at war, that is so evidently being waged against us?
That's a loaded question, and I think that Brother Mustafa covered it very well. You know, but all of anytime you want to change something, you know, you have to become aware of what is going on. Because if you're not aware, then you're just out here stumbling in the dark. And what I want to encourage all of our people to do is to be aware of the time and what must be done, to be aware of where we are right now in our societies, in our communities, where we are economically as a people. Because until we become aware of our situation, then there is no way that we're going to address our situation in a manner that is productive for us. I mean, it has long been said that black people need to do for self. Black people need to get their own communities. Black people need to do this. Black people need to do that. First of all, black people have to be educated. And if you're not educated, if you're not aware of what is going on, it is hard to fight an enemy with your eyes wide shut, so to speak. So, you know, people need to become very realistic. You know, I think we who are, you know, deeply involved in social media have a great responsibility into making these situations more and more aware. What often happens is that it makes headline news for a little while, and we slip it on the back burner until it happens in our community or until it happens in our family. But if we were to sum up all the numbers over the last 400 and something years, they have killed a nation of our people, and it's not going to stop. So I don't know. It's just like when you have a drug addiction. I don't know what your bottom is. I don't know what it's going to take for you to see that we need to make a change. But those of us who claim to be conscious, those of us who claim to be the followers of the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad have a great responsibility to be the example of what we say we believe in. And even though the minister, the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan, is our leader and teacher and guide, we have a responsibility to follow his example, and we need to meet our people where they are, and we have a responsibility to give them that information. That's our responsibility. We call ourselves soldiers. Well, how are we soldiers when we ain't even battling the water that's in the streets right outside our door? So we ain't even defending our communities. How in the hell are we going to defend the nation? I ain't feeling none of that. So the first thing we have to do is make people aware that there's a time, and that time is now that we have to separate. Because, see, everybody's hell-bent on slavery. You're talking about slavery is the worst thing that ever happened to black people. No, it's not. It's not. The worst thing that ever happened to black people is integration, and that's the integration of your mind with your enemy.
Go ahead, sir.
So now if you don't clean up your mind, your butt ain't going to follow. You feel me? So you have to clean up your mind. And that's what I'm saying. Everything is for naught if you don't have the mindset to move forward and to be progressive in what you say you want. You say you want freedom, justice, and equality, then you have to be progressive in that effort. And you have to be willing to unify with your people and stop letting the division that Willie Lynch taught you keep you away from your people and keep you away from the essence of freedom, justice, and equality. Because if you ain't free in your mind, you're not free. Period.
That's right.
So that's my answer, Brother Kareem.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
And so, I mean, and whatever on that same note, you know, I would want to weigh in on that myself, because everything that you said, Brother Mustafa, and everything that you said, Queen Aziza, right on point.
The thing is that when we look at that, and I know this has been preached and preached till the conscious ones, quote unquote, are blue in the face. However, when we look at one point you hit upon, Queen Aziza, about those of us who are using social media, what are we using it for? The instructions we've been given by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, if I'm mistaken, someone please correct me. However, not just even before he started the 52-week series, The Time and What Must Be Done, he had given us instructions to use social media to spread the word. And I noticed myself, you know, as I look at what's posted on Facebook, and I don't have no 1,000, 2,000 quote unquote friends, as they, you know, using the terminology of the page. However, the things that I see posted, there's a lot of good things that get posted, but a lot of what we post, to use the term I've heard in movies, is a lot of bull hockey. Okay.
Yes, sir. Yes,
I mean,
sir.
It is a waste of valuable time. And a very something that could be a very valuable resource to us.
Yes, sir.
I mean, I remember the minister in a believers meeting talking about the fact, and then he also went into it, I think even on the social media page, but he talked about the fact, and I'm not, and whether I, well, you know what, whether I get in trouble or not, I really don't care. The truth is the truth. The bottom, and as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says, the truth stands on its own. It needs no support. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan mentioned the fact that you have sisters who come on and they're not wearing hijab, or as we know it, headpiece.
Mm-hmm.
And you got yourself out representing yourself as a Muslim follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad on these social media pages. So what does that say? Now, some would say, well, that's not my business. Well, yeah, that's between you and Allah. However, if you are representing yourself as a follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and his instructions are, this is just one thing, his instructions are that you cover your head in public. This is a public forum. Why aren't you following instructions? Now, to get to us, FOI, I've seen some of the worst, most horrible disrespect of our sisters posted by individuals who claim to be FOI. Excuse my language. Nick, what are you doing?
Uh-huh.
How are you going to stand and say you stand and you represent the Lord of the world, Master Farrakhan Muhammad, and you're disrespecting our sisters like that?
Mm-hmm.
That just doesn't fly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, today, and now I'm speaking more specifically now to those of us who say we are followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And when I say that, I don't care what camp you in,
mm-hmm.
whose leadership you say you're under. One of the things that we have to do in this effort, because when we say that we are followers of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad or students of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, let's go back. What was his main mission? What did he constantly say he was here to do? He was here to resurrect the dead. So if I am his follower, I am his student, regardless of whom I say I'm under, who's guiding me at this point, or whether I say I'm not under anybody and I just got the teachings and I'm following the teachings, then my time is best spent doing what he did, resurrecting the dead. That means walking my post in a perfect manner. What does that mean? Since I hear individuals all the time saying, well, no man is perfect, do you really understand? And I'm getting back to this command of the language again. Do you really understand what perfect means? The best example of that I have is in the Bible, and it's in the book of Job. It's the story of Job. When God says to Satan, have you seen my perfect servant Job. What made Job perfect in the eyes of the Lord? Was it that he was faultless? Was it that he didn't make any mistakes? No. What made Job perfect was that regardless of whom or what he went through, what he experienced, he always deferred to God. He always sought his answer, his guidance in the teachings, in the scripture, in the mind of God. That's what made him perfect. So that being the case, if I'm walking my post in a perfect manner, that means that everything, all my actions have got to come out of the teachings. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm going to be a robot.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does mean is that when I get up in the morning, after I say my prayers, thank Allah for awakening me another day, then I seek guidance from him, and then I apply that guidance in my walk. That doesn't mean I got to be, I think what they used to call it in the church, a holy roller or a Bible thumper or a Quran thumper. Doesn't mean I have to do that. However, my every action to the best of my ability, every word that proceeded out of my mouth, should be one that is designed to resurrect the dead. And the first dead I got to resurrect is me, because I'm supposed to go back to sleep.
Go ahead, Black Man.
You know what I'm saying? Living in this world, I'm supposed to go back to sleep at any time. So the first dead I must resurrect is me. Then from that standpoint, by at this juncture in our lives, how long have we been here? Quote unquote, as the Nation of Islam. Is it 83 years, 84 years, or 85 years?
83 years.
83 years. 83 years.
Yes, sir.
We have been here. And look at the condition of our people. We're not going to talk about the condition of the world because we know that that must be, that must happen. So if I'm walking around talking about I have supreme wisdom, why don't I see evidence of that in the community that's around me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we're spending time. I mentioned this before, and I'm gonna mention it again. And like I say, not quote unquote picking on anybody. However, the things like I say, I see in the social media that we're discussing there, that we're arguing about. Say arguing the best manner. We're arguing about things which have no bearing on our survival as a people in this time. We waste a lot of time talking about things of the past that don't help us. I mean, me personally, I don't care what color Prophet Muhammad was.
Mm-hmm.
I know the Honorable Elijah Muhammad stated that Prophet Muhammad of 1,400 years ago was a white man. That I don't need to do no research. He's the messenger of Allah. He's the exalted Christ. That answers it all. The question I want to know is, Allah, when I walk out of my door today, how can I best represent you? Allah, since I say that I believe that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is your divine reminder today in our midst, that he is your messenger in our midst today, how can I properly represent him? What example can I take from him that when I walk out this door and people see me, they don't see some nigger. They don't see just some businessman. But they literally see, whether they recognize it or not, God walking and talking. Somebody they want to get next to so that I can share that God with them so that they can be saved too.
Yes, sir.
But, you know, the time is winding down. So, brother, I want to give you a chance again, you know, we've got about 15 minutes left. I would really like for you to expound on what you personally are doing. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, about, you know, the situation that you dealt with, but what you are personally doing and what you all are doing there in is West Pensacola, correct?
It's Pensacola.
It's just Pensacola? Okay.
Yes, sir.
What you all are doing there, some of the activities that you all are doing, you know, along these lines.
Yes, sir. If I may, dear brother, before I go into that, if I could address some of the social media things
absolutely, brother.
I would really, really like to touch on that. I've been on Facebook since 2009, and prior to that, I didn't even know nothing about no Facebook until I went to Savior's Day to tell you the God the honest truth. I went to a media workshop hosted by the Nation of Islam Savior's Day, and everybody was talking about Facebook. I said, "Face what? What's that?" They said that's where all the believers get together and they, we talk. I said, "Really?" I said, "Okay, I'm gonna check it out when I go back home."
Yes, sir.
And I got on Facebook, I believe, April of 2009. And in my early days of Facebook, I was very immature with my Facebook usage. I've used my Facebook to do some, not the worst thing. I don't want to think of the worst thing, but I didn't use it to its best use in sharing supreme wisdom, knowledge, and understanding.
Yes, sir.
And my regional minister, Minister Rasul Muhammad, he told me to use Facebook as an extension of your ministry. That is your ministry. He said, use it as a pulpit to share truth and teach the people. And that interaction with him transformed my outlook of what Facebook was, and I began to see it as a platform to give a message not just to people in Pensacola, but to a worldwide audience. I have people from as far as Malaysia following me on Facebook, and we communicate, and I share the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Without Facebook, I couldn't do that. I would be just limited to brothers and sisters in my own city or the next nearby city. But through a social media, I have people in Africa writing me. Malaysia, as I mentioned, other parts of the world, the Muslim world, are writing a little brother who grew up in Pensacola, Florida, but I'm sharing the wisdom of a messenger with the whole world. That's the proper use of social media.
Come on,
using it as an extension of your ministry. And speaking of sisters who come on Facebook and do those things, and any sister that's on here listening, please don't be offended, because my brother was very balanced in what he stated. He stated things that sisters do that are out of line, but he also stated things that brothers do out of line. But speaking of things that sisters do out of line, don't be offended by brothers saying that or think that this is some FOI versus MGT or we out to bash our beautiful black queens. We want the best for our queens. And we are FOIs, and we may not be MGTs, and we may not be privy to MGT class, but we are citizens of the Nation of Islam. And as citizens of the Nation of Islam, we want the best for our Nation of Islam, and we want the best for you, sister. Your best is with your head covered. Your best is your modest dress. Your best is looking like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told you to be, because he said that a nation can rise no higher than its woman, and you judge the success or morality of a nation by its woman. So we want our women to look the part. And we're going to work on our brothers to make sure we not just look the part, but we be the part. Because there's a lot of foolishness going on Facebook, on parts of some brothers who do this and that. But Facebook, by this experience, has really taught me if we use these social medias, we have power, brothers and sisters. I have not used the traditional media here, but my story has gone all across the nation. What happened to me in Pensacola, they're talking about it in Nashville. They're talking about it in other cities that I have not even visited. My brother on the phone here is from St. Louis. He's talking about the story, but I live in Pensacola. But through proper social media, I was able to tell a story, and now it is spread now. But I didn't use the 6 o'clock news for that. I didn't use the radio for that. I just used a Facebook page and told what happened to me. And other friends began to spread it and share it. So So we have power to tell our stories through social media. We also have YouTube. You can get a video recorder, film educational instructional videos. And through YouTube, you can spread your message throughout the world. We also have Twitter. We also, you can produce a blog if you're a writer. You don't have to wait for these newspapers to publish your articles. You can found your own blog, publish your own news, your own articles, and you will have a worldwide audience. You can produce your own website and host that website for $12 or less a month. You can go on eBay. You can even produce your own store through eBay and sell your products to a worldwide audience. The enemy has given us a great tool with this internet and this social media if we use it properly. We can use this as a fishing and recruitment tool. The Nation of Islam has already shown us how we've used it to raise our Savior's Day gift through friends and family donating through Facebook and other places with our Savior's Day gift. So use this social media in the proper way to spread knowledge, to share the teachings, to add to enlightening discussion, as the Honorable Louis Farrakhan has told us to do, so that we can create an information revolution using this social media. I'm sure Mr. Zuckerberg didn't intend that when he was creating Facebook, but we're going to use it for what we use it for.
That's right. That's right.
Yes, sir. What we are attempting to do here, dear brother, just very simply, because I know time is brief, what we are attempting to do is walk in the shoes of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Where his foot goes down, we are attempting to put our foot down behind him. Where he tells us to go, we are attempting to go. Where he tells us to stay from, we are attempting to stay from. Where he tells us to build, we are attempting to build. Where he tells us to save, we are attempting to save. So we are attempting here to present to the community the program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Though that community may be in the church, do for self sounds real good, whether you're in the church or not. We're trying to present how to eat to live to the community in a universal way. We're attempting to go after the little brother in the highways and the byways and show him that you're not no thug, no pimp, or no player. You're a God man, but you have not known who you are. We go after the little sister who may, due to circumstances, may feel she has to sell her body or do other things. We teach her, you're not what this world say you are. You are God's woman. Let us teach you and clean you up and make you God's woman, dear sister. We are doing those things, and specifically, as I mentioned during the program, we're going to put on a program where we're going to bring the community in and bring this brother who has experience with the law to educate the community on those specific things on how to survive an encounter with the police. What do you say? What do you not say? How do you act? And thus and so. As well as different things that we're attempting to do here to make the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan word bond. But as the scripture says, if I be lifted up, I will draw all men unto you. So all we have to do, family, is lift up this man in our cities, wherever we are. Lift him up through the final call. Lift him up through sharing the DVDs. Lift him up through sharing the time and what must be done broadcast. Lift him up by telling a testimony of what Farrakhan did for you. Tell them how he changed your life, how he saved your life. That's the greatest thing you can do. What did he do for you? Give your testimony. And I promise you, if you lift him up, he will draw all men unto you. Because time has produced circumstances where the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are getting ready to look very attractive. When this white man has given you a pink slip, do for self going to look very attractive. When your health has failed you and you have no health insurance, how to eat to live is going to look very attractive to you. When the whole world has shut you down, the Brotherhood of Islam and Sisterhood of Islam is going to look very attractive to you. So circumstances and time is going to make our program look very attractive to the whole community very soon, because Islam comes when all else has failed, and everything has failed us, including the time in which we live in right now.
Yes, sir. All praise is due to Allah. Well, Queen Aziza, I know you're
yes,
there.
Sir.
Yes, ma'am. We wind it down. We down to the last 6 minutes of the show. Before we run out of show, I would like for you, if you don't mind, to share the lineup.
Yes, sir, but before I do that, you know, I want to say one thing, if you don't mind, Brother Kareem. You know, when we talk about Facebook and social media, let me say this. What I have learned since I've been on here, since 2010, what I've learned is that, you know, I don't want our people to be misled. You know a believer when you see a believer. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the questions in our problem book is, can the devil fool a Muslim? And the answer is no, not nowadays. So what I'm saying to you is that there are a lot of people who portray or pretend to be Muslims on Facebook. But they are oftentimes agents. And sometimes they're agents and don't know that they're agents. And so sometimes they will try to lead a people astray. And, you know, with the FBI having access to everyone's account who is on Facebook, please don't be deceived and not think that they have not put certain people and created certain profiles for you to gravitate to make you think that they are believers. Don't think that they have not, you know, recruited certain members to, you know, go through process and then get their ex and, you know, fall in the ranks and, you know, appear to be believers. But I want people to be aware that when the minister speaks of a time of separation, it's not a separation of black and white. It's not just that separation. It's a separation from believers from disbelievers. I'm not in the position to call anybody a hypocrite, but Allah knows the hypocrite. So anything that you try to keep from me, that's fine. I don't need to know that. I'm not the one responsible for your salvation. But there are so many of our people who are fooled into thinking that these government agencies love you and you just, you know, you the prime rib of the Negro and they going to put you in these places and you're going to infiltrate. But you cannot fool Allah. Allah is the best of knowers. So, you know, you can form your weapons, but they're not going to prosper. So when you see sisters up here and their name is like mine, Sister Aziza Mariam, and they got their boobs hanging out or they saying something crazy, hey, be not dismayed. But, you know, don't be fooled. Let's just keep it real. You got to know your people when you see your people. And when they're acting other than your people, you know, it's not for us to condemn our people. All of the eyes of Muhammad say, don't condemn our people, to encourage them. You encourage them. You do what you're supposed to do and let them reveal who they are through their actions. I can't tell anybody how to work their Islam. You know, but I know Islam when I see Islam. All right?
Yes,
okay, so now. Okay,
yes,
so now let me go on with the lineup. Okay. Thank you for joining us tonight. I want to get that out. Everybody in the chat room, everybody on the lines, thank you for calling in and tuning in online to listen to our show tonight. Tomorrow, we're going to have a rebroadcast of Brother Jihad's show. Brother Jihad, our dear brother who hosts Out on the Frontline on Tuesday, has surgery today, so let us pray for a speedy recovery for him. He will be back next week, inshallah, but let's still continue to send out our prayers, and may Allah bless him. him with a speedy, healthy recovery from his surgery. On Wednesday night, tomorrow, 7 p.m., join DJ Black Caesar and Willie for our comedy hip-hop show. On Thursday, yours truly, Queen Aziza Mariam Muhammad, will be back. My topic this Thursday is the naked woman who will clothe her. Whose responsibility is it? Is it hers or is it the men who are the maintainers of women? Huh? We'll find out. That is Thursday night at 8 p.m. Join us Friday night for study group with Minister James Muhammad out of Tampa, Florida. And on Saturday, join us for Young, Gifted, and Black, where the Nation of Islam hip-hop artists get together and share their music as well as their ideas about how music and film and how those things are going. And, of course, on Sunday, Brother Vernon will be here with Economic Development talking about the blueprint for the Nation of Islam. So join us here. We're here every day of the week. And thank you all for listening. I'm going to let you close it out, Brother Kareem.
Yes, ma'am. Well, again, I want to thank everybody. Thank you, Brother Mustafa, for joining us. Thank you
for having us.
So praise be to Allah. Thank you, Queen Aziza, as always, for your efforts and for allowing me to even be a part of Nation Building Network. Remember, this is Nation Building Network. You have been listening to Conscious Black Nation. Remember, the thought is the act is the fact. You got to come on and participate before we all dissipate. See you next week, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
One nation, one love. Good night, y'all. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, Queen.